God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things. This is Brother Hutchings inviting the listeners to these stations to another Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. And here now is Brother Jerry to introduce our broadcast.
Thank you, Brother Hutchings. Again today, Dr. Carl Baugh joins Brother Hutchings to share information from his compelling book, Why Do Men Believe Evolution Against All Odds? We started the three-day series yesterday and will conclude it tomorrow. As we mentioned yesterday, these programs were first heard when Dr. Baugh's book came out a few years ago. And given the fact that evolutionists are turning up the rhetoric in defending their ungodly position, these programs and the book give you valuable ammunition to fight the battle. You'll have opportunity to get that book as well as another that Dr. Baugh has written. Dr. Baugh is founder and director of Creation Evidence Museum in Glen Rose, Texas. He holds degrees in theology, archaeology, and education. Here now is Brother Hutchings and his guest, Dr. Carl Baugh.
Dr. Baugh, would you again tell us about this latest book of yours?
Well, Dr. Hutchings, I'm very excited about this book because we have needed a book like this in the hands of academicians, in the hands of general Christians or critical scholars, whoever might be able to get a copy. We've needed this for this generation. We are living at a time when science has made tremendous strides and technology governs most aspects of our lives. And having said that, let me be quick to state that science has now reached a point at which they, some years ago, assumed they would never reach. That is, at realizing that at the basic structure of living systems, they are so intricately and interdependently interrelated that there is no explanation for their origin outside design. And I'm leaning upon outstanding scholars such as Dr. Michael Denton, such as Dr. Michael Behe of Lehigh University, who recently published Darwin's Black Box, in making such a statement. In the days that Charles Darwin lived, they assumed that the cell, the basic structure of life, was a blob of protoplasm. But now, these two individuals that I mentioned a moment ago, world-class scientists, have brought to the attention of a global community the fact that the design structure within the living cell is so interdependent and so intricate in its organization that Darwinian evolution or naturalism cannot explain it. Now, listener, as we contemplate this book, which is now available through Southwest Radio Ministry, and I'm very delighted to be identified with them. This book is titled, Why Do Men Believe Evolution Against All Odds? And in the next few broadcasts, we're going to see that the odds against evolution are absolutely overwhelming to essentially render it of no effect in explaining life origins. And as we introduce the concept, let me be quick to state that creation, living systems, our own existence, creation is an awesome contemplation. Now, with an inheritance derived from the origin of this creation, we individuals are endowed with a preoccupation to ask four questions. In fact, geneticists are now realizing that all people ask these four questions to such a specific degree that they must be genetically programmed into our very nature. Otherwise, we wouldn't have different races, people of different climes and national status at all ages asking the very same questions. We're preoccupied with these. They are, who am I? Where did I come from? What's my purpose here? And where am I going after this is over? All people ask these questions. Now, we need answers to these, and in this book, Why Do Men Believe Evolution Against All Odds, the first thing I do in the introduction, for the sake of the academicians who might be listening in this audience or those who might be gifts of a book that you, listener, might provide for them, for their sake, I list a statement made and a declaration made by the National Academy of Sciences, and it's called An Affirmation of Freedom of Inquiry and Expression. Because individuals might think, well, if I declare my position, I will suffer loss. Well, you may suffer loss, but the National Academy of Sciences has issued this statement that the search for knowledge and understanding of the physical universe and of the living things that inhabit this universe should be conducted under conditions of intellectual freedom without religious, political, or ideological restrictions, without political censorship, and without fear of retribution in consequence of the unpopularity of their conclusions. Those who challenge existing theories must be protected from retaliatory reactions. Now, at first, we would be encouraged with that statement. However, it is the norm today for academic institutions to protect the sanctity of the faculty and professors if they believe naturalism, but to some degree to ridicule them if they do not believe naturalism. So actually we have a practice in direct opposition to the statement of religious freedom and inquiry. And we suspect that when that statement was made some years ago, creation, or at least a respect for Christianity and biblical sources, seemed to be normal at the state institutional level. Now that evolution is entrenched, we don't have the same cooperation extended to us. But I might add quickly that I'm invited quite often to lecture in public fora, such as high schools, colleges, and universities, on this very subject. I appreciate that. Now let's cover another area as we introduce the concept of this book. Scholastic evolutionist D.J. Fujiyama, who is recognized internationally, and he is an evolutionist, stated succinctly for us that creation and evolution, between them, exhaust the possible explanations for the origin of living things. Organisms either appeared on the earth fully developed, or they did not. If they did not, they must have developed from pre-existing species by some process of modification. If they did appear in fully developed state, they must indeed have been created by some omnipotent intelligence. Now, for those listening to the broadcast today, this statement was not written by a leading creationist, but it was written by a scholastic evolutionist who admitted that it's either creation or evolution. There is no middle ground. Having said that, let's cover some of the information in the first chapter of this book. And as I'm giving you this information, I want to encourage each of you to get your own copy. And I think the further we go into these broadcasts, the more you'll realize that this full color, fully graphically illustrated book is a must for your home and for the library at your church or at your school or state university, for that matter. In covering the marks or the characteristics of evolution, let me first point out that naturalistic evolution, the theory of evolution, the proponents of this theory, recognize that evolution cannot be harmonized with special creation. There are many in the audience today who consider evolution just as another thought process, but it actually is a religious dogma entrenched in the thought process of many individuals and particularly academicians. Now, I also want to point out that I know of other highly qualified academicians who are not persuaded that evolution even should be taught as a viable theory. So we have people on both sides. But the first point I want to make, and that I bring out in the book, is that naturalistic evolution cannot be harmonized with special creation. There are many theologians who somehow believe that there is evidence supporting evolution. Therefore, they feel that the two concepts can be harmonized. Dr. Hutchings, I've heard individuals, well-intentioned Christians, say, well, God could use any method he wanted to create the universe and to create living systems and man. Therefore, if he used evolution to do it, that's his business. Well, now, at first, that sounds plausible until you realize that God said he did it specifically by direct special creation in increments that were specific in six literal days. And if God didn't do it like he said, then God lied to us. God never lied to us. And I'm pleased to say that Southwest Radio Ministry has always taken a clear stand on creation, recent creation, six literal days of creation. The first mark of evolution and evolutionary theory is the following. This might come as a surprise to some of our listeners. There is an enormous gulf between the two positions. William Provine, professor of biological sciences at Cornell University, pointed out in a scientific journal that many biologists have pointed out modern evolutionary biology has shattered the hope that some kind of designing or purposive force guiding human evolution and establish the basis of moral rules. Instead, he says, biology leads to a wholly mechanistic view of life. There are no gods, he says, and no designing forces. He concludes by saying the frequently made assertion that modern biology and assumptions of the Judeo-Christian tradition are fully compatible is false. So we can't lean on a hope that, well, maybe the two ideas can be reconciled. They cannot be reconciled. Materialism is opposed to the concept of God creating the universe. Dr. Duane Gish of the Creation Research Institute points out that creation and evolution involve fundamentally different views. And then he quotes Dr. R. Lowenton, who stated, "Yet, whatever our understanding of the social struggle that gives rise to creationism, whatever the desire to reconcile science and religion may be, there is no escape from the fundamental contradiction between evolution and creationism. They are irreconcilable worldviews." So the listeners in the audience should be aware of the fact that these two views are mutually exclusive. They can't be married. Therefore, the first characteristic that I point out in the first chapter of this book, Why Do Men Believe Evolution Against All Odds, is that naturalistic evolution cannot be harmonized with special creation. The second thing that I point out is that naturalistic evolution cannot be supported scientifically. Now, did you hear what I just said? We're barraged by propagandistic methods and data every day. Dr. Hutchings told me that he listened to a program recently with over 30 references, one television program, with over 30 references to our arriving and living systems arriving by evolution. We are barraged on every hand with this propaganda. In school, in the home, television, radio, newsprint, everything is written from the slant and the spin as if evolution were already proved. Not only has it not been proved, it cannot be proved. And the second point illustrates this, and the book illustrates it quite well, that naturalistic evolution cannot be supported scientifically. And I quote from a recent publication of Darwin's own work, Origin of Species. Dr. L. Harrison Matthews, the British biologist and evolutionist, wrote the introduction to Darwin's current Origin of Species publication. In it, he made the following admission. The fact of evolution is the backbone of biology, and biology is thus in the peculiar position of being a science founded on an unproved theory. Did you get that? In writing the introduction to Darwin's own book, which is the basis, has been the basis to move this entire generation away from God towards secularism, in the introduction, the leading British biologist and evolutionist himself wrote that evolution, even though it's the backbone of biology, biology is thus in the peculiar position of being a science founded on an unproved theory. He goes on to state that belief in the theory of evolution is thus exactly parallel to belief in special creation. Both are concepts which believers know to be true, but neither, up to the present, has been capable of proof. However, I want to make sure that you read all the book and listen to all of these broadcasts, because I think if you're open-minded, you'll realize that creation is far more scientifically plausible than evolutionary theory. Now, in addition to that, an article written for Newsweek and appearing, featured in Newsweek by Sharon Begley, Science Contra Darwin, makes the following admission, and you should be aware of this. The great body of work derived from Charles Darwin's revolutionary 1859 book on the origin of species is under increasing attack, and not just from creationists. So heated is the debate that one Darwinian says there are times when he thinks about going into a field with more intellectual honesty, the used car business. During the remaining moments on the broadcast, I'll try to mention some of the other characteristics or marks of evolution as brought out in the first chapter of this book. The third mark is that naturalistic evolution cannot explain the origin of life. Sir Frederick Hoyle and Chandra Wickramasinghe have been recognized for more than two decades as the leading astrophysicist in our academic community. Now, an astrophysicist is one who has a background in physics and math and chemistry, biology. He has it all together. And these two scholars recognized, or from their viewpoint, held to the concept that not only did life arise by evolutionary means, that is, inorganic material producing organic material that increased in complexity and ultimately produced man, but they not only believe that that's how it happened, but given enough time anywhere in the universe, it would happen again. So they spent more than a decade researching the literature and the laboratories and the libraries, and finally published in a major journal, which I quote in the first chapter of this book, that the likelihood that the formation of life from inanimate matter is one in a number with 40,000 zeros after it. And Sir Frederick Hoyle stated, it's big enough to bury Darwin and the whole theory of evolution. He says there was no primeval soup, neither on this planet nor any other, and if the beginnings of life were not random, they must therefore have been the product of purposeful design. Well, that means that the origin of life cannot be explained by evolutionary means. The next mark or characteristic of evolution is that it cannot address the issues of life. Recently, Science News reported that a University of Texas at Arlington researcher, Raymond Eve, administered an extensive survey regarding the underlying convictions held by creationists and evolutionists. And he found that a high percentage of professional people were creationists. Now, let me say that again. He found that a high percentage of professional people were creationists. This was reported in Science News. And that means that thinking people who accomplish things to a very high percentage degree in the population are creationists. And after assimilating the data, he admitted that science can't tell you what the meaning of life is, why we're here, or how to handle bereavement or guilt. You see, naturalistic evolution cannot address the issues of life. But let's take it further. Naturalistic evolution offers no personal hope. Many of our people have been very kind to the theory of evolution. I believe in being kind to evolutionists. In the past, I have believed in evolution to my chagrin in this hour. And I believe we should be considerate and compassionate to individuals. But I want you to know that if the theory of evolution is fully embraced, it offers no personal hope. In the book, I quote leading scholars who state that the ultimate demise of the universe will be either the Big Freeze, that is a continued expansion, ultimately resulting in a heat death of the universe, the Big Crunch, the eventual collapse of the universe upon itself, or the Big Fizzle, the eventual dissipation of structured energy in the universe, so that no matter how you approach it, there is no ultimate personal hope for mankind that can be accommodated in evolutionary theory. And then very quickly, let's mention another concept, which is a mark of evolutionary theory. That is that evolution can provide no lasting peace. Charles Darwin returned to England at 27 years in age in a robust state of mind and body. It was not until a year later when he began to write in his evolutionary notebooks that he first felt and commented on his illness, forcing himself into a lifetime of severe, repugnant, and sometimes ludicrous disability. Now, what I've just read to you is not a scathing appraisal of some fundamentalist, but that is the appraisal documented in this book and given by leading scholars who recognize the history of Darwin. Well, we have only a few moments left, so let me simply read the other marks. Naturalistic evolution, I'll just read the high points. Naturalistic evolution concerns itself with no meaningful dignity or future accountability. And I quote philosophers who have admitted this to be true in their own lives and in their worldview, embracing evolution. Then naturalistic evolution cannot reconcile the present events with future destiny. And Charles Darwin illustrated that clearly. And then naturalistic evolution reflects on no meaningful lasting accomplishments in this life. And that's documented to a high degree. And this would surprise us. No wonder then that evolutionists will not tolerate an alternative. And that's the final characteristic or mark of evolution that I mention in the book. It permits no alternative view. It must hold an imperial position.
We've been visiting today with Dr. Carl Ball, author of Why Do Men Believe Evolution Against All Odds? In beautiful four-color, all the pictures and charts, hardbound. And here now is our announcer to tell you how you may obtain a copy.
Thank you, Brother Hutchings. There are three ways to get Dr. Baugh's book, telephone, mail, or the Internet. A single copy will be sent for a gift of $20, or get three when you make a contribution of $50. To order, call 1-800-652-1144. That's 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio Ministries, Post Office Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008. Or log on to the Internet. The web address is swrc.com. In addition to the 160-page hardcover book, Why Do Men Believe Evolution Against All Odds?, we're also making Dr. Baugh's 91-page softcover book, Panorama of Creation, available. Get it for a gift of $10, or get a single copy of both books for a contribution of $25. The three programs in this series are offered on compact disc for a gift of $15. In the hardcover book, Dr. Baugh says the tenets of evolution are insisted upon against overwhelming and impossible odds, and its justification exists only in the minds of those who adhere to the fallacy. Darwin was wrong, and the Bible is right on how we came to be. Call, write, or visit the website today for your copy of Why Do Men Believe Evolution Against All Odds for a gift of $20 when you order one copy, $50 for two. Panorama of Creation will be sent in appreciation of your $10 offering. Or you can get one copy of each book for a $25 gift. Call 1-800-652-1144. Write to Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008, or log on to the Internet. The web address, swrc.com. It's time for today's question and answer over most of these stations. Thanks for being with us today. Join Brother Hutchings and Dr. Baugh tomorrow for your Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. It's time for Southwest Radio Ministries' question and answer session. Today's question will be answered by Dr. Larry Spargimino. Certain cults teach that Jesus was a mere created being, actually Michael the archangel. In one publication, they quote 1 Thessalonians 4:16 to support their position. 1 Thessalonians 4:16 states, "For the Lord himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trump of God, and the dead in Christ shall rise first." They claim that the words "with the voice of the archangel" indicate that Jesus is Michael the archangel. Brother Larry, do you agree with that?
Well, Jerry, no, I don't. On the basis of this reasoning, Jesus is also a trumpet. The passage says that Christ will descend, quote, "with the voice of the archangel and with the trump of God," close quotes. The Watchtower people claim that Jesus is the first and highest of all created beings. So then we have to ask this question, how could he be Michael? Michael is not the first and highest of all created beings. Daniel 10:13 says that Michael is one of the chief princes. Now, if Michael is one of the chief princes, he is one among equals and certainly not the highest created being. The Jehovah's Witnesses, I believe, totally misread 1 Thessalonians 4:16. That verse does not say that it is Jesus himself who speaks with the voice of the archangel. It simply says that when Jesus comes in the air to rapture the church, he comes with the archangels whose voice is heard. This is similar to what happens at the second coming of Christ 7 years after the rapture. 1 Thessalonians 1 verse 7 says this, "And to you who are troubled, rest with us, when the Lord Jesus shall be revealed from heaven with his mighty angels," close quotes.
Jude 9 states, "Yet Michael, the archangel, when contending with the devil, he disputed about the body of Moses, durst not bring against him a railing accusation, but said, The Lord rebuke thee." Doesn't that also argue against the position of the Jehovah's Witnesses?
Well, Jerry, it sure does. This verse says that Michael did not even dare to rebuke the devil, yet Jesus Christ rebuked the devil on several occasions. Since Michael the archangel could not rebuke the devil on his own authority, and since Jesus did so many times, that can only mean that Jesus Christ and Michael the archangel are not the same being. So we can safely say that Michael the archangel is not Jesus. Jesus Christ has the prerogatives of God and is actually called God in the Bible. In Isaiah 9:6 we read, "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father." Jesus is not a created being, but God himself.
That's today's question and answer from Southwest Radio Ministries. Each Tuesday and Thursday, we answer your questions. If something in the Bible is puzzling you, send it to us, and we'll do our best to put it on the air. Send it to Southwest Radio Ministries, Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008. Each month, Q&As and Bible in the News reports will be published in a booklet. If you'd like a copy, call, write, or visit our website. Please include $3 to cover shipping and handling. The number to call, 800-652-1144. Write to Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008, or visit the website at swrc.com. Join us for the next Watchman on the Wall program and a Bible in the News report or question and answer.